jaw comes unhinged, just like mine. I guess I was dead wrong about not liking athletes.
Chapter 11. Fate hates me. Wesley. I don't believe in luck. I believe you make your own luck through work and practice and skill. But what in the ever-loving fuck is this bullshit? Does fate hate me? Is this my comeuppance for eating ice cream 5 nights ago when it's not on my meal plan? That's a hell of a price to pay. Maybe this is the universe's payback for the time I didn't read To Kill a Mockingbird in school, but looked up the spark notes instead, then did the same for every other book that followed? If so, karma has a funny sense of humor, but I'm not laughing. Hold on. I know what this is. This has to be a prank, a fantastic, elaborate prank. Like the time Max and Asher loosened the top on my water bottle before my first game last season, and the liquid spilled all over me while I was on the bench. The ESPN cameras were on me and caught the whole thing. I laughed it off then, except I'm not laughing now as I rasp out, Josie? When? Shit. I'm not supposed to know her name. Christian's only ever called her Jay, clearly a nickname based on her first initial. But he must not notice the way her name is strangled by my throat, since he claps me on the shoulder and says, "Thanks again for helping out. Always knew you were a good one, Bryant." He yawns, checks his watch, and says, "I gotta go." He strides over to the flirty, outgoing brunette with a scar on her chin and the cat-eye glasses. She's wearing a black skirt and a white button-down shirt. Unfairly sexy. I jump back in time to before the game when Christian was telling us about her. How the hell could he call her quiet? There's nothing quiet about Josie. Especially when she asked me to bend her over the bed and fuck her hard. Christian wraps her in a big bear hug. "Brian lives in a safe hood," he says, then lets go and flashes her a satisfied grin. "Guess that means I won and you got yourself a bodyguard after all." Right. He wants me to look out for her, not date her. No shit, Sherlock. Still, my help a teammate out vibe has never been so flattened like a pancake as it has been tonight.
"Yes, a bodyguard,"
Josie repeats, clearly flustered, but Christian doesn't seem to pick up on it. Everly does, though. Tilting her head, she lifts a brow curiously, studying Josie's reaction, then mine. But she's our PR woman, and I don't want her thinking I don't want to help, or worse, figuring out I've already fucked my teammate's sister. That'd be bad. Christian is so by the book, so rules-oriented. I straighten my shoulders, adopt my media grin, then close the distance to my new roommate. I stick out a hand in the world's most awkward handshake. "Hey, nice to meet you," I say, the lie sailing off my tongue as easily as, "Of course I read To Kill a Mockingbird" did in 8th grade. Josie's pretty pink lips twitch for a few seconds till she brightly says,
"You too."
She pauses before she adds,
"Wesley?"
"All right," Christian says, brushing one palm over the other. "My work as a problem solver is done." He shoots me a stern stare with his steely ice blue eyes, colder than his sister's, more calculating. "See you at morning skate on Sunday. And don't forget what I told you earlier." I fight off a grimace and paste on a smile. We're all good. As Christian heads to the player's lot exit, Everly rolls her eyes, then says, "Let me guess what he told you earlier. Is it the antiquated, sexist, don't touch my sister rule?" She asks it like she wants to step on that rule and stub it into the ground with her heels. Yeah, I say, embarrassed on behalf of testosterone and its stupidity. "Men," she says with a heavy sigh. "Seriously." She turns back to Josie. "Listen, if there's anything you need, I'd be more than happy to help out."
"You don't have to,"
Josie says. "I want to," Everly says, boss mode activated completely. "I work with these guys every day. They can be
ornery kangaroos,"
Josie offers. I shudder. Kangaroos can be mean. Everly lifts a finger. "Precisely." Then to Josie, she says, "Text or call anytime. We can talk about survival tactics." For the first time since she spotted me, Josie smiles.
"That would be great."
Everly gestures down the hall. "I'm off to the media room. Thanks again for taking a few questions earlier, Wesley." "Anytime," I say, And when she takes off, I'm left alone with a woman I wanted to ask to hang out again. The woman I wrote a note for. The woman I've been obsessing over all damn week.
We don't have to do this,
she says quickly, her eyes flickering with worry. Fear, too, like I'm going to yank the offer out from under her. No way. She needs a place. Just like she needed pants on Sunday night. It's cool, I say. And I'm about to reassure her further when Max and Asher stream out of the locker room, followed by Hugo. Ah, hell. I'm not in the mood for a group introduction. I drop my voice. Want to get some food and talk? She nods and I point toward the players' exit before they can head there. My dad came to the game tonight, but I already talked to him right when it ended, so I've done my part. Josie and I walk together to the door, but the coach exits his office as I pass it. I straighten my shoulders the second I see Noah McBride. He's dressed in a charcoal suit, his short hair is neat, and his expression is intense. It's only ever intense, the man does not mess around. Hey, coach, I say. He chin nods toward me. Good game, Brian. Keep it up. It's said evenly, without emotion or a clap on the back. But I don't need an attaboy. Those six words are more than enough. I will, coach. Then he nods toward Josie. Evening, Ms. Winters. Holy fuck, even coach knows she's Christian's sister? She smiles his way.
Hello, Mr. McBride. Good to see you again.
With a crisp nod, he heads the other way, and I lead Josie to the exit. I'm tempted to put a hand on her back as we walk. But I don't. I can't anymore because... karma. Chapter 12. The Roomie Rule. Wesley. I have so many questions, but first things first. I open the car door for her when my gaze swings to the back seat and the evidence of my intentions on it. That won't do. As she's sliding into the front seat, I quickly yank on the door handle for the back, then grab the bag, muttering, just a sec.
No worries,
she says. As she buckles in, I fish out the now pointless note. I stuff it into my back pocket. That letter she left on hotel stationery wasn't a clue after all. It wasn't a treasure hunt, like I'd mistakenly thought the morning after. She's just a girl who's got a lot on her plate and legit had to jet in the morning. It's fine. Really. It is. I slam the door harder than I'd expected, then head to the driver's side. Once I'm in the car, I hand her the bag. Here you go, I say, then turn on the car and cruise through the lot.
Oh my God, Wesley.
Fuck me, that excited sound, the smell of her perfume, cinnamon in my dirty dreams, her lush chestnut hair. This is harder than scoring on the New York goalie. You left it behind, I say in a statement of the obvious. But hell if I'm gonna let on how goddamn excited I was to find it the other day.
Thank you so much. I went back to the hotel that afternoon to the lost and found, but they didn't have it.
She went back to check on a scarf, but not to ask for my name? Like the hotel would give her your name. Get over yourself. She hugs the scarf to her chest.
My aunt gave this to me. I'm really glad to have it back.
Glad I could help, I grumble, a little annoyed. I'm annoyed because my plans are shot. I'm annoyed because I'm going to be living with temptation. And I'm annoyed because, well, she didn't come looking for me. Which is the stupidest reason of all to be irritated. Still, I am. I focus on heading to the nearest salad and grain bowl spot instead. Nope, scratch that. I don't want to run into fans or worse, teammates. I take a detour to a place in Russian Hill instead, since that's kind of, sort of, on the way back to my place, but far enough from here. Along the way, we make uncomfortable small talk about food, the hills and the city, how light traffic is at this hour. It's painful. I pull up to Garden Kitchen and park. Once inside, I order something acceptable. Sliced chicken, avocado, cherry tomatoes, and no cheese, while she orders a veggie and cheese bowl. We snag a table, but keep ourselves busy getting napkins and water. Once we sit and a server brings the food, the elephant in the room is tromping around, getting louder and noisier. Best to deal with it, stat, even though there are so many questions I have. So your brother calls you Jay?
Yes, he couldn't say Josie when I was born, so he always called me that.
She pauses, her expression resigned. Maybe frustrated, too.
And I guess he calls you Bryant.
Well, yeah. It's a thing we all do.
I know.
She says like she wasn't born yesterday. Of course she knows we use last names. Hell, she knows the coach. But there are more elephants to deal with. And you're in the book business? That came out a little bitter.
Yes, I'm a librarian.
She says.
And I guess you are the sports asset rather than being in sports assets.
I feel a little called out, rightfully so. But facts are facts. Yeah, I guess players are assets, I say with a shrug, like it was no big deal to tell her that.
I guess so.
She says, distant. I mull over her tone as I take another bite from the bowl, then ask, You're pissed I didn't say I played hockey? She shakes her head.
No.
She pauses, though, like she's not done.
I mean, I get it. I sort of wish I knew, but I also understand why you didn't tell me.
Why do you think I didn't? I'm not sure she could know my reasons, but I'm damn curious what she thinks they are. Her blue eyes hold mine as she says,
Because you probably just wanted a night to be sort of someone else.
She nailed it. She might not know the exact reason why, as in my dad likes to control everything I do, since my career is everything to him. But she figured out enough. Same for you, I ask. Though I suspect since she wanted to have a one-night stand with a stranger, she probably also wanted an escape from her regular life. Just like I did.
Same.
She says, then spears a forkful of tofu, chewing thoughtfully. When she sets it down, she adds,
And also, I was deliberately vague about my family because people tend to kind of geek out when I mention my brother, so I didn't want to say that I'd been to San Francisco a few times for his games. I went to one last season.
You met the coach then?
Christian introduced me to him briefly. That guy has a good memory.
No shit, I say. But that's coach in general. His mind is a steel trap, but then, so is Josie's. You do too. She shrugs.
I'm good with names.
I'll say. Then I freeze with a bite of chicken midway to my mouth, my mind tripping back in time. This is going to sound weird, but for a moment when I met you, I thought you looked vaguely familiar, but not in a way where I could place you. Maybe I did see you at a game, the one you went to last season? She smiles apologetically.
Maybe. I was in that same hallway I was in tonight, meeting Christian after a game.
I set down my fork with a heavy sigh as the deja vu feeling crashes back into me. But it's more clear this time. Yeah, now I remember seeing a pretty woman with Christian one night. But I never met her, of course, and I never thought twice about it, really. Just my luck, I say sarcastically. She laughs.
I've been saying that a lot this week.
Hell. She has had a bad week, and I have been kind of cold tonight. I try again to be civil. So your place fell through? The one you got locked out of?
No, another one. That was just my friend Maeve's place, the woman I talked to at the show.
Right. I guess I figured you were living with her, I admit.
I get that. You would have no reason to think I wasn't. Anyway, I had a short-term rental, but the landlord sold it at the last minute, so I turned to Christian for help, and well...
I manage a smile I don't entirely feel. Here we are, I finish for her.
Here we are.
She echoes, then takes another bite of her veggie bowl. I try not to linger on watching her eat, even though I really like her mouth. Picture her pretty lips as she said she wanted to objectify me 5 nights ago, and... Yeah, things are gonna be real hard with her in my house. I wipe my mouth with a napkin and take a drink of my water. I'm not even sure what to say next. I should say I'm sorry I didn't tell her what I did for a living, but neither one of us was very forthcoming about details that night. At the time, it was deliberate. We only gave as much info as we wanted to. She didn't even come back to my place. And in retrospect now, it's clear what the other night was, and... what it wasn't. It wasn't the start of a new romance like I foolishly had hoped when I woke up. It wasn't the beginning of our dating season like I'd tricked myself into believing this week, and not only because she's my team captain's little sister, but because she meant what she said that night. She wanted one night and one night only. I pat the note I'd planned to leave with the scarf, making sure it's safe and sound in my pocket. It is. It won't ever see the light of day. Then I draw a deep breath and do the right thing. I move on. You're good with this, Josie? I don't want you to be uncomfortable, but I'm truly happy to have you living with me, I say, meaning it, since I hate the idea of her out there in a dangerous neighborhood when I have the tools to help her. For as long as you need. Her blue eyes are etched with gratitude as she asks,
Are you sure?
She sounds so vulnerable, so worried. I feel like a dick for having been, well, a dick tonight. Of course, I volunteered. I'm happy to help. But I'm really going to sound like a dick when I say the next thing. Still, I have to say it. We need to lay down the rules. Guess it's a good thing that night was a one and done. I cringe at the way that sounds all casual and cool, like I'm a playboy when I'm not.
Totally.
She says quickly, sitting up straighter as she smiles. Way to punch me in the gut, Josie. Right, I say with a big laugh, a goddamn gregarious one. And obviously what happened has to stay between us.
Oh my god, clearly.
She says, agreeing easily, like we're totally sweeping the other night under the rug together. Look, it's a dumb rule, like Everly said, but it exists for a reason, the good of the team, I admit honestly. You need to go to war every night with these guys. You need to trust your teammates. And if you're sleeping with their sisters and things go sideways with that, then... She nods vehemently.
You don't have to tell me twice.
That's the thing. I don't need to convince her about why this golden rule exists. For the good of the team. I don't need to win her over to it since she's already on board. It's like Sunday night never happened. I definitely don't need to convince her. She adds enthusiastically,
Especially since we're roomies now and it's just a bad idea to...
But she swallows whatever she was going to say. Sleep with your roomie? Date your roomie? I don't even know, so I nod, because whatever she was going to say, I'm sure I agree with. Yes, exactly. The roomie rule.
And we'll follow it.
She adds. We absolutely will. We finish eating, and rather than ask her out for another night, I'm asking a more surreal question. Want to see your new room?
I do.
She says, then adds with a smile.
Roomie?
She says it brightly, like that's all she wants to be. That's going to have to be fine with me.
Chapter 13. I'm a prick. Josie. Wesley parks outside Maeve's place so I can get my things. Be right back, I say, cheery and upbeat. I'm done with my brief bad mood over dinner. That was rude of me anyway. There's no need to be sullen about Wesley not telling me he chased pucks for a living the night we met. Not when he has the thing I need most, a place to live in comfortably for the next 3 months. And damn it, I'm going to be the best roomie ever, just like I tried to be the best second-born child ever. I fly up the stairs to Maeve's place, grateful she's out at a catering gig so I can hustle quickly. Once inside, I grab my suitcase, pre-packed this morning, just in case. Then I rush to the bathroom to check the shower, which I won't miss. Then the vanity. All good. I didn't leave anything behind. I'm ready to go. I text Maeve on my way to the door. Josie, I love you madly, and I am so, so, so grateful you let me stay here for the week. Also, we're going to need a major debrief tomorrow, like the biggest debrief of all time. For tonight, I am heading to... Josie. Wait, I think I'll make you guess. Maeve, admit it. You love that I track you. Josie, you weirdo. Maeve, check your weirdness at the door, girl who left on her tracker for 5 days. Anyway, can't wait for the debrief. I do like the tracking. Maybe because no one cared that much about my whereabouts when I was younger. I still haven't turned it off. I grab the doorknob, but my gaze catches on Prick. After snagging the cactus I named, I hold it gingerly, then head downstairs, lugging my suitcase and avoiding the wobbly step. Won't miss that either. When I hit the first floor, I march as fast as I can to the door. Wesley's leaning against the car, looking relaxed and, well, climbable. Shame. He's wearing his post-game suit, which I appreciated far too much during our dinner, but he's shed the jacket already, So now he's lounging against the car in tailored burgundy slacks that hug his strong legs, a cream button-down and no tie. The cuffs of his sleeves are rolled up, revealing a hint of ink on his forearms, the line drawing of the dog, and the edge of a music note. He's holding his phone in his hand, listening to music, presumably, giving me a few seconds to think about the real weirdness. I'm going to live platonically with the guy I tried desperately to see again. Hell, I implored Frida the Witch for his last name. She might have even told him I practically begged, bribed, and bought art for that last name. But I'll deal with that another time. For now, I have a place to stay. And so what if it's with a man who saw me naked once? Wesley clearly just wanted a one-night stand, and that's fine with me. I wanted the same with him. Well, I did at the time, but it's not like I'm going to let on to him that I wanted more once it was over. He might think I'm clingy, or worse, a stalker. Trying to track him down again at an art gallery is kind of a lot. My stomach churns at the memory from last night. When Wesley makes eye contact with me, he hits stop, then pops out his earbuds and sets them in his pocket as he trots up the steps to grab my suitcase.
Let me help.
Thanks, I say brightly, shifting into super roomy mode as he hoists my luggage easily into the car, even though it weighs 50 metric tons. Once he's shut the trunk, I thrust the cactus at him. Here you go. I got you a housewarming thank you present. His brow pinches.
Already?
Well, Christian said he'd find me a place. I say, then I want to kick myself. I'm re-gifting the plant to a guy who's been generous enough to open his home to me. Real classy. But it's okay. I can get you something else. What do you like? I mean, besides ice cream and records. And giving me orgasms.
Plants are cool,
he says, but it's like I've handed him a baby when he's never taken care of one. They don't need much. It's a bunny cactus. Just a little water. I call it prick, though, since it attacked my chest last night, made me bleed. I say, and wow, what a great gift, girl. His lips twitch.
Prick.
I wince. I'll get some ice cream tomorrow. He curls his hand around the little terracotta pot, shaking his head.
Prick is perfect.
He sets it gently on the floor of the back seat, then holds my door open for me. Once inside, a new reality hits me as he starts the car and eases into traffic. I don't have anything besides my clothes and books. You said you had sheets, but do I need to get anything else? Towels, toilet paper, hangers? I wave a hand. I'll just go to Target tomorrow. I can take the bus. As he buckles in, he smiles, the confident, in-control kind of grin he gave me the other night.
Josie, it's furnished, and I have all those things already.
Of course it is. Right, right, I say. The decorator. You mentioned a decorator. He scratches his jaw.
Decorating's not my thing.
What is your thing? Besides saving half-naked women with clothes and now saving fully clothed women with homes. Well, I'm excited to see it, I say, playing the super roomy role perfectly since he's clearly a super landlord. Which brings me to another point, something I should have asked Christian. What is the rent? Wesley scoffs. I wait for his answer, but he's silent. Seriously, what is it? I ask again, hoping it's affordable. I'm sure it is. That was the point of me asking Christian for help. Still, I want to know.
Josie, I'm not charging you rent.
I can pay. I have a job. It's only for 3 months, but still, I have one. How about I pay whatever I was going to pay for the short-term rental? He shoots me a quick look before he changes lanes.
How about you don't?
Wesley, I plead. This man is so generous, but I can't keep taking from him. I want to pay something.
Josie,
he says, his voice as stern as it was when he told me to bend over the bed.
I own my home, outright. I only want you to be a guest.
Now is clearly not the time to argue with this bossy and generous man. And that's a lethal combo, lethal to my panties. I'll find a way, I say, and maybe I can plant some seeds for the next time this comes up. I can cook, I can make coffee, I can water plants, I can help, and I can shelve books according to the Dewey Decimal System.
How about you do your own dishes and keep things neat, and we'll call it good?
I can tell that's as far as I'm getting, so I drop the topic, saying, I won't miss the spring on Maeve's couch. He tosses me a look as he slows at the lights on Fillmore.
The one that was going to stab you in the ass?
I groan privately. I told him about the evil spring the night we slept together. Way to move on, Josie. Yes, that one. And it definitely attacked me. I have the bruise on my butt to prove it, I say. And that probably doesn't help either, all this butt talk. I quickly pivot. So, if you don't have black sheets, are they Sea Dog's colors?
They're navy.
That's in the same family as Sea Dog's colors, I point out as he drives.
The Sea Dog's color is royal blue,
he says. Okay, this isn't awkward at all, discussing the precise hue of his team colors instead of the attack spring. Right, of course, I say, then hunt around for safe topics. Not hockey, not Sea Dog's, not the other night. What do roomies discuss? House stuff. So, you have a room under the stairs? Is it like a cupboard? He shakes his head.
No, it's a room. It sort of extends past the staircase. It even has a window. And a nook.
My mouth waters. A reading nook?
I guess you could use it for that.
What else would someone use it for? He shrugs as he drives past shops I'll want to check out soon, like an open book and bling and baubles.
I don't know,
he says.
I don't use it. Honestly, no one has even stayed there since I moved in. Guess it's a virgin room.
That doesn't make me think of sex either. He flicks the turn signal and turns onto Jackson Street, full of modern homes with Scandinavian designs, square-like structures and cool shades of gray, with metal and wood accents that give them a modern minimalist feel. Every yard is well-kept, every porch is pristine, and every home screams money. I hate that Christian was right, but this area is the opposite of the one the short-term rental was in. Wesley pulls into a tiny driveway, then hits a button for a sleek garage. Once inside, I step out of the car into a neat, clean space. Is Wesley neat and organized? I'm dying to know, simply because I want to know him. But I shouldn't want to know him. He's just a roommate, that's all. He pops the trunk, then grabs the suitcase from the trunk before I can. I snag the cactus from the floor of the back seat as he punches the code into the door and swings it open.
After you.
He flicks on a switch. Everything is light and airy, clean and quiet. We head up a short flight of stairs to the main floor where he sets my bag down.
Let me show you around.
I try not to gawk. Really, I do. I've seen nice homes before. My brother has a nice place. But Christian's 5 years older, and he's always felt 20 years my senior. Wesley feels like my generation. And it's strange for someone my age to have a place this upscale. How old are you? I ask, instantly wishing I could take it back. I've been trained not to ask people's ages. You're not supposed to do it at work. I shouldn't do it with Wesley, even though I could find all his info online since he's a pro athlete.
27,
he says, saving me from Google as I set down the cactus on a table in the foyer.
I grew up in Denver. I was drafted at 18, played in college. Then in New York for 4.5 years, was traded last season in February. I studied marketing in school.
He says, then shrugs.
Yeah, it's the jock major, I know.
But I wasn't going to say that. I don't think it's the jock major, I say earnestly. He shrugs casually.
It's cool, it is. At least it wasn't my school. And I took rocks for jocks, dinosaurs for jocks, planets for jocks, and so on.
I feel terrible now. I didn't mean to make you feel like you had to give me your CV. It's just really nice. You're home. I'm not used to that from people my age. I'm 26. Since we're both course correcting from the other night, I add more. I have a master's in library and information science. My undergrad was English, and hey, I took physics for poets, I say, and that makes him laugh as he leans against the doorframe leading into the living room. It's a good look. One I cannot, should not, and will not linger on. And English was the nerd major.
Your words.
I like words and nerds, which I am obviously one of, I stage whisper. Wesley holds my gaze for a long beat, his eyes going darker, his lips curving the slightest bit, almost like he wants to say something, but then must think the better of it since he says all businesslike now.
Let me show you around.
He walks me through the living room. There's a huge U-shaped couch, a flat-screen TV with a game console, and a record player on a table. We head into the kitchen, which is Man Magazine style worthy. I can't resist. Hey, it is black and chrome, I tease, rapping my knuckles on the marble counter.
Yeah,
he says, scratching his jaw like he's taking it in.
But I don't mind. I don't use it a ton.
He strides to the Sub-Zero fridge, so gleaming it could double as a mirror. Patting it, he says,
I'll make some room in the fridge for you. It's full of prepared meals right now.
He sounds apologetic, but whether it's for the meals or the lack of fridge space, I don't know. You cook in advance? Because I can definitely help with that, I offer, hoping, truly hoping he takes me up on it. My aunt taught me to cook, and I can do healthy stuff too, like you had tonight. He gives a quick shake of his head.
I have a meal service.
Oh, okay, I say, a little defeated, but I'll find some way to help. That sounds fun too.
My dad set it up, the meal service,
he says, lowering his voice like it embarrasses him. He mentioned his dad that night, that he'd sent him to the art gallery. I'm about to say something along those lines to show I paid attention, but I think the better of it, since I don't want to bring up Frida and maybe summon her somehow. She'd probably descend in a black cloud of vengeance and Chanel and tell Wesley I've been creeping on him. So I say, sounds cool.
It's whatever,
he says. And that whatever is doing a lot of work in telling me how he feels about his meal plan and perhaps his father. He guides me down the hall, gesturing to the staircase leading to the second floor.
I'm up there.
Got it. The main bedroom suite. I say, then playfully, or so I hope, add, I'll stay away from it. His jaw ticks briefly, then he moves on and says,
And there's a room at the end of the hall. It's a gym.
Makes sense.
But I usually work out with friends instead.
Cool. He turns around and opens the door under the stairs, and I moan in pleasure. The cutout-style white door leads into a cozy room with a peaked roof. He gestures for me to go first, and I head inside, whimpering in happiness as I look around. There's a dove gray area rug with cute geometric shapes in different colors on it, and a full-size bed with a navy comforter. The best part, though, is the window seat. It's covered in white and blue pillows, and my heart does a jig. It's the cutest thing I've ever seen, I say, bringing my hand to my chest.
Yeah?
It's so cute I could cry, I say. Then impulsively, I fling my arms around him. It's the first thing that's gone right for me since I arrived, I say into his neck, where I catch his scent. It's the way he smelled the other night, like the forest trees from my little town in Maine and a mountain stream. I save these details in my Wesley file. He has a favorite cologne, maybe even a lucky one that he likes so much he keeps it at home and at work. I draw a furtive inhale, and once again, he's my sexy stranger, the man who plus-oned me into an art opening simply to help me, who took me shopping so I wouldn't feel foolish without pants, who bought me ice cream on our date, who rented a hotel room to fulfill my wish for a one-night stand. For a second, he seems unsure what to do with my hug. Then his strong arms wrap around me, his muscles mold to my body. Images flash wildly through my mind. His arm locking me into place when he fucked me hard the other night, his hands on my ass when he went down on me. His lips coasting over every inch of me, including my belly button ring. When he breaks the embrace before I do, his eyes drift over my body, stopping at my stomach. Is he remembering my belly button piercing too? He clears his throat, but he looks blank, almost stony, as he says,
There you go. Good night.
He's gone, leaving me alone in this room. It's only when I sit down on the bed that my last words echo. It's the first thing that's gone right for me since I arrived. I groan. I've already insulted my new landlord. I'm the prick.
Chapter 14. My Wingwoman. Wesley. Saturday morning is now for working out instead of asking out. That's fine. It's totally fine. It's a rest day since we played last night, but cardio's cool on rest days, so I hit the gym with Max and Asher, who give me hell from the Stairmasters about me saying yes to Christian. If they only knew the whole of it. But I'm not telling them, now or ever. Maybe, I don't know, you should offer a room to the coach's daughter next, Asher suggests, so fucking helpfully, as we're leaving the gym on Fillmore Street.
Don't forget the owner's sister, too, Max puts in.
Mock me for being nice, that's a real good look, I say to the two of them as we head up the block, bustling with people pushing strollers and carrying coffee and more babies.
You're so sweet, Wesley, Asher taunts.
We must protect you at all costs, Max adds with faux admiration.
After I check that no one's watching us, I hold my hands out wide, then flip them both, double birds.
With friends like you?
Friends. Who said we were friends? Max tilts his head, adopting a confused look.
News to me, Asher says with an innocent shrug.
And on that note, I'm out of here. I give them a wave and they do the same back, then I take off at a rapid clip. Why walk when I can run? I pop in my earbuds, blasting the last Shadow Puppets as I near my favorite coffee shop, Dr. Insomnia's. Does Josie like coffee? Should I grab her one? I bet she likes lattes. I'm turning toward the chalkboard sign by the door, tendrils of purple steam rising above a chalk drawing of a coffee cup in the same color, when I decide against it. That's a boyfriend move, not a roomy one. As I cruise up the street, I get a little lost in the music. But when I turn onto Jackson Street, a strange mix of both dread and excitement builds in my gut. It gets stronger as I near my home. I don't like this feeling. Trouble is, I don't know how to behave around Josie. Yesterday, when I offered to help Christian, I figured it'd be a ship's passing in the night kind of deal with his sister. She'd do her thing, I'd do the captain a solid. My parents always taught me to help out whenever you can. True, when it comes to my dad with me, he overhelps. But Mom had a good sense of balance, and still does, so my offer wasn't so much sucking up as second nature. I wish I could call her and ask her what to do next in the situation, since she's good with people, but she's been traveling across Asia with her husband. He's from Vietnam, so they're doing a connect with the roots type of tour, and I don't need to bug her. Too bad that give-a-hand instinct now has me living with my one-night stand, who I wanted to date, but can't. The whole situation gives new meaning to the word awkward. When I reach my home, I bound up the steps, bracing myself for... I don't even know what I'm walking into. I barely know Josie. Plus, she wasn't awake when I got up. No idea if she's an ogre in the mornings or an angel. If she bounces around in pink workout pants doing Pilates and planks, or shuffles bleary-eyed in jammies and fuzzy socks. Maybe she'll be wandering around post-shower, a towel cinched around her tits, her wet hair sleek down her back. I pray it's not the latter, even though I fucking wish it were the latter, which sums up my life right now. But when I unlock the door and head inside, my home is eerily quiet. Well, her brother did say she kept to herself. He knows her better than I do. I tow off my sneakers at the door, drag a hand through my sweaty hair, and head for the kitchen to grab a glass of water. After I pour a cup and down it greedily, I turn around, spotting an album on the counter, resting against the blender my dad got me. It's a record I've been wanting. Plus, there's a folded over sheet of paper with my name on the front. My heart gallops for a beat or two. Weird. Must be the post-run adrenaline. Yeah, that has to be it. I flip open the sheet of light blue paper, and I stand corrected. It's two sheets of paper. This girl loves writing notes with pen and paper. It's long as fuck, but I'm determined and glad, too. She took the time to put it on two pages.
Dear Wesley, something you should know about me is this. When I go to bed after 9:30, I turn into a monster. Think Medusa, Grendel, Pennywise the Clown. And then I say things like, this room is the first thing that's gone right all week. I'm sorry. That was so insensitive of me to say. Clearly, this room is not the first thing that's been good about this week. Anyway, I'm the worst. My only excuse is the late bedtime. The room is amazing, and so are you for helping me out yet again. I know nothing about the Good Neighbors Band, but the guy who runs the record shop on Hayes Street, who incidentally looks like he runs a record shop, what with the shoulder-length hair, leather bracelets, wiry arms, and goatee, said if you like Ben Rogers, you'll probably like the Good Neighbors Band. I hope you don't have it already. Anyway, here it is, a thank you gift. The cactus doesn't count because it's a prick. P.S. Since we're roomies now and this stuff is probably useful, here are 5 things you should know about me. 1. I love mornings. 2. I am not as neat as you, but I promise I will be neater because your neatness is inspiring. 3. I love to explore, and I plan to learn everything possible about San Francisco over the next 3 months. 4. C3. I like to learn. It's basically my entire personality. 5. I also am in a committed relationship with baking. But should I keep tempting food out of the house? I don't mind not baking for the next 3 months. I am very adaptable, which is sort of a 6th thing about me. Josie.
After I take my time reading it, making sure I didn't miss any words, I set it down on the counter, rubbing my sternum because it feels a little funny, a little fizzy. No one leaves me letters, ever. In 1 week, I've received 2 from her. It's kind of adorably old-fashioned. I bet she likes Bridgerton, too. Probably old standards like Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald as well. I pick up the album, my lips curving up in appreciation of the gift, but mostly the gesture. Something bothers me about the letter, though. The time frame. She's only here for 3 months. There's an expiration date to her presence. But that's for the best. Really, it is. I head to the living room to put the record on when the front door swings open.
Good morning. I picked up fruit,
Josie says, holding a canvas bag, her chestnut hair back in a high ponytail, her jeans painted to the curves of her ass.
You said you had meal plans, and I know you don't need someone to cook, and I definitely don't want you to break your plan, but I figured fruit is always allowed, right?
Pretty sure, I say evenly, since I don't want to let on how much I like that she brought me fruit, or how hard it is to look away from her pink, glossy lips.
Cool. So maybe I can pay rent in fruit,
she says, so damn hopeful. She's making such an effort to contribute that maybe I shouldn't be so rigid. You can pay the rent in fruit, I say, acquiescing. She pumps a fist.
Yes!
But you're not going to pay rent in cleaning or cooking or anything like that. You're a roommate, not a maid. Also, good morning.
Thank you,
she says with genuine gratitude and acceptance, too, that rent isn't up for negotiation. She walks toward the living room. She's wearing a sky blue top that slopes off one shoulder. A very tantalizing shoulder I want to kiss, lick, and bite. She stops in her tracks as her gaze lands on my feet. I'm just in socks now. She kicks off her sneakers next to the table with Prick the Cactus on it, then continues into my home offering an apologetic glance my way.
Oh, I see you got the album.
I did, I say, sliding the LP out of the cover. You really didn't have to.
I felt bad about last night,
she says, frowning.
What I said, and the way you left the room.
What does she mean? I rack my brain trying to figure it out. No idea what you're talking about. She's peering at me through those cute glasses, looking flummoxed momentarily. She takes a breath, then says,
well, you left in such a rush, you just took off.
I flash back to last night in her room. She hugged me for a good long time. I caught the scent of her hair, vanilla, then the scent of her skin, cinnamon. My brain short-circuited, then sent me back in time when she pressed her face against my chest. Oh. Oh. Shit. She thinks I was mad at her when I hightailed it out of her room. That couldn't be further from the truth. That's not why I left, I say curtly.
Okay,
she says, but clearly she's still confused. I could alleviate that confusion. Really, I could. But I'm not sure telling her I wanted to fuck her last night would fix this problem. Instead, I turn around and put the album on the turntable, taking my time setting the needle on the groove. As the first track fills the room, she heads into the kitchen to set the canvas bag on the counter. She takes apples, pears, figs, and grapes from the canvas bag with intense concentration that's not needed for the task. But maybe it is needed to deal with a dickish roomie. But what am I supposed to say? You have no idea how hard it was not to fuck my hand to thoughts of you last night, like I've done several nights prior. Also, your lips are incredible. Instead, I head into the kitchen to help her. I grab the grapes. I can wash these.
Thanks. I don't know where the colander is anyway.
I need to do better. Let me show you where everything is. She smiles at me again.
You don't mind?
What kind of monster would I be if I did mind? And who's treated her so poorly as to mind about something like that? No, of course not. I spend the next 20 minutes properly showing her around the kitchen and washing the grapes. Then I give her a better tour of the living room, the guest bathroom, the gym, and the garage. I don't show her my room because, what's the point? She's not going to come upstairs ever. I'm not that strong. When we're back in the kitchen, I say, "So that's that."
"Thanks again,"
she says, cheery. But it's like she's trying extra hard to be nice. Maybe because I was a dick. Maybe because I'm still behaving like one. I lean against the counter and try a new tactic. "Who's Grundle?" Her blue eyes sparkle as she says,
"The monster in Beowulf."
Yeah, maybe it's for the best I never dropped off that scarf with my note. There's no way we'd work out. A guy who hates reading and a girl who's obsessed with it. No dating app is matching the librarian with a dude with dyslexia. "Pretty sure that was in my do not read pile in high school," I say, with a deliberately easygoing shrug.
"Confession, I think it's in everyone's do not read pile."
That's a minor relief, that she didn't like Beowulf. Did anyone? "But I like Pennywise," I say, then quickly add, "from the movie. Well, I don't like him, but mad respect for his villainy."
"Definitely."
"Also, I don't think you're a monster. Like you said in your letter." I scratch my jaw, hunting for a suitable explanation for my behavior. "Listen, last night when I left your room, it wasn't over what you said. I was just adjusting." She takes a few seconds, seeming to consider that.
"I'm sorry. Am I cramping your style living here?"
Ah, fuck. We are not at all in sync on anything. "No, not like that, Josie." With big, guileless eyes, she says,
"I'll look for another place. It shouldn't be a problem. I'm sure I can find something in a few days. I'm very resourceful."
That is not happening. No way. Failure is not an option. No.
No?
I place more emphasis on the word. No. You're staying here. Your brother wanted you in a safe neighborhood, but guess what? I do too. She blinks like that comment surprises her.
"But I don't want to put you out or make things weird."
Then, like an idea just landed in that big brain of hers, she says,
"We can make rules for that too. Like, what happens if you want to bring a girl over?"
She offers it like she'd be my matchmaker now. Maybe my wingwoman. Like she's gonna want to flop down on the couch next to me when I return from a date, rip open a bag of popcorn and say, "So how did it go? Do you like her?" And everything, every single thing about that image is all wrong. Especially the flip side of it. What if she wants to do the same thing after she goes out with a dude? I grimace. But then I try to do the right thing as I say, "Or, if you do." It comes out like there are stones in my throat. She shakes her head.
"I won't."
I cross my arms. "I won't either." It's a face-off. For a too long beat, we stand here in the kitchen waiting for the puck to drop. Problem is, I'm unsure what we're even fighting about. "Josie, it's all good. I'm happy to have you here, and you are definitely, absolutely not going to look for another place to live," I say, then lock my eyes with hers. "Got that?" Her pink, glossy lips twitch in a smile.
"You're still bossy."
That's what she said to me the night we spent together. And just like that, some of my tension melts away. "Yes, I am." She breathes out a big sigh.
"Okay, then."
She hesitates.
"But I'm truly fine with us making rules, for anything. It'll make this whole roomie thing easier, and I just want us to get along."
"Me too," I say. But the thought of making rules for when we want to screw other people makes me clench my fists. "But let's deal with that rules thing another time." Speaking of time, I check the clock. "Hey, I need to meet up with my dad while he's in town," I say. Then a terrible thought lands in my head. Frida. What if she's there at lunch? What if she brings up the woman in the t-shirt? I don't want to deal with that with my dad. Don't want to tell him I have a roomie now. Don't want to hear about how other people are distracting. Still, since Josie and I are trying to be honest, there's something she should know from that night. Frida from the art gallery is his girlfriend. Josie's face goes pale, her voice strangled as she asks,
"Frida the witch?"
"Unfortunately," I say with a laugh. I tilt my head, considering this woman who landed in my life with her words and her gifts of fruit and song and her belly button piercing and her letters and her clever mouth and her bright attitude.
Do you have a nickname for everyone? The prick, Frida the witch, etc.?
Yes, I do,
she says, and before I can ask if she's given me one, though I probably shouldn't ask that, she adds in a worried voice,
are they coming over?
I scoff. God, no. He'd critique my walls and my choice to not buy art. I already got an earful the other day, through my sister. Apparently, Frida told my dad and my sister about the woman in the t-shirt. I figure that'll ease the tension more, make Josie laugh. But instead, she looks like she's just seen a monster for real. She's covered her face with her fingers. What's wrong, Josie? When she drops her hand, she looks like she's bitten something sour.
I went to the gallery on Thursday night to get your last name.
If I were on the ice, I'd skate into the boards in shock. You did? There's no way she said that. No way she did that. There's no way she was doing the same thing I was doing. Amped up, I take a step toward her, like I'm going to close the distance between us, pin her against the wall, and devour her, which would be a very bad idea. And yet, it has a hold on me. She nods.
I did.
I'm this close to breaking our first roomie rule till she says,
I went there to thank you for helping me the other night. So if she brings it up, that's what happened. I wanted to thank you with a cactus.
She spins on her heels and takes off for her room, like I did last night, leaving me with more questions than before.
And when you do the late night workout, it can improve your performance, Dad says as he spears his fork into his salmon dish. We're at his favorite seafood place by the marina, and he's eating the same thing I ordered. Seared salmon with asparagus, a little lemon on the side. I used to think this was ordering solidarity, but I'm pretty sure he eats like this when I'm not around, too. The dude is made of iron and discipline. Yep, I say, since that's what Domingo said already, the guy my dad hired who I worked with all summer.
It's nothing that different from what you do during your regular workouts. Deadlifts, weighted push-ups, side planks.
He drones on. It's not that I disagree with Dad or Domingo. I'd just rather discuss something else during lunch.
Sports science shows the benefits of this. It's a productive time to keep up your strength, Dad adds.
After I finish my bite, I say, and that means I'll be less likely to come up short in a race to the puck. He beams.
Exactly, Wesley.
I knew that was what he wanted to hear. His smile lasts, a rare one on his otherwise stoic face. I've been told I look like him. Strong jawline, straight nose, same brown eyes. His hair is shorter, though, and speckled with gray. He's got the whole George Clooney vibe working for him. I guess that's why he's done so well with the ladies since he and my mom split when I was younger. He chats more about the post-game workout plan, and I nod and listen as I finish my lunch.
I can send that all to you over email, he says. You should read it, too.
I grind my teeth, but then say, I'll listen to it, Dad. He knows that's what I do. He hired tutors for me when I was younger. He helped me get a handle on my issue.
Good plan.
When we leave, he says,
listen, Frida mentioned this woman.
I groan. Seriously, I do not want to discuss Josie with Dad. Well, I would if he wanted to discuss it like a normal dad.
Yeah? Are you seeing her?
Nope. He nods, pleased.
Just making sure you're not distracted.
I snore laugh. He's got me scheduled every second the sea dogs don't.
How could I be?
He tilts his head in question. I don't have time to get distracted, I say lightly, always trying to lighten the mood. It fails, though, since he says,
that's the right mindset.
When he says goodbye and I walk home, I'm entirely too distracted by thoughts of what my roomie's up to. Figuring I should be civil to her, like she's been to me, I send her a text. Wesley, do you like Bridgerton?
Chapter 15, Just the Tip, Josie. Maeve flips through the shelf of memoirs at an open book as I finish telling my friends my tale of woe. Fable is here, too. She's the lead designer for the San Francisco Renegades and a friend of ours as well. And you didn't recognize him at all the night you met him? Fable asks, but it doesn't come out as an accusation, more a legit question. I'm not into sports. I mean, they're fine. I don't hate them. But I don't know rosters. If any pro athlete but my brother was walking through this store, I wouldn't recognize them. I say, would you recognize all the football players? Yes, but I love the game. Fable says, as she tucks a strand of her red hair behind her ear and sets down the book she's been checking out. Freckles dot her fair skin. I'd recognize Asher Callahan, Maeve puts in. I roll my eyes. That doesn't count. He's your brother's friend. I'm just saying I would, Maeve adds. I toss my hands up. You two are not helpful. You're supposed to be on my side. Hockey players are not that recognizable. Fable gives me that point. Fine, that's true. Then she snickers. Still, it's funny that Wesley Bryant is kind of known around town for being this hot tamale, and you banged him without having a clue who he is. And now you're living with him. Maeve adds with a snort, her wild golden hair falling in her face as she doubles over. You too, I say, exasperated. I called this meeting today for you to help me deal with living with him, to give me tips. Fable's lips go ruler straight as she says, like, can you have, wait for it, just the tip? Maeve points at her, nodding. That's totally acceptable. That won't violate any rules. You should definitely play just the tip with him, Fable adds with a so helpful smile. My face flames hot. Why am I cursed with being easily embarrassed and also overly sexed? As if I haven't been thinking about Wesley like that already. Shh, I say as an elderly woman walks past, a small child tugging her hand along. The other tip is this. Just sit on a bucket of ice for the next 3 months, Maeve offers. Freeze out your vagina. Or buy stock in toys, Fable adds with her signature confidence, and I can't get a word in edgewise with these two. Speaking of, have you figured out that issue? Fable asks with mock concern. Maeve parks an elbow on the shelves, her face going serious as she echoes, yeah, have you? How I'm going to masturbate with him around? I whisper, incredulous that they're really asking that. Yes, that's a real problem. Will you? Won't you? Maeve asks with a straight face. I am a beat. But I hold my chin up high and answer them. When he's out of town for games, I will. So there. After they buy their books and I make note of ones I'll borrow from the library, we leave. On the way down the block, my phone pings with a message from my roomie asking if I like Bridgerton. I don't show it to my evil friends as we walk to a coffee shop. I reply quietly with, "Is that a trick question?" Then I tuck the device away, only to be met by the Cheshire Cat grin on Maeve. That smile means he's texted. I groan. I can't have any secrets with you. Giving in, I show them the text. Since I'm a glutton for punishment, I tell them what happened this morning when I confessed to Wesley why I'd seen Frida. I couldn't very well tell him I wanted to track him down to see if he was up for hanging out again. He made it perfectly clear it was a one-night stand. And so did you, Fable points out as we reach Dr. Insomnia's. She's right, but just because I actually wanted more doesn't mean we can have it. Look, it's fine. It's for the best if we try to be nice to each other, to get along. Maeve grabs the door and yanks it open. Yes, Josie, you should text him back because it's nice, not because you still want to ride his dick. You're not making this easier, I say. I know, and I have no regrets, she says. Speaking of no regrets, let's talk about the list, I say as my stomach dips, thinking about item number 2. Maybe I've been avoiding it. No, there is no maybe about it. I've definitely been avoiding the second item Aunt Greta left for me, because it's about overcoming a fear. Once we grab our lattes and seats, we shift gears to the list of the top 10 things I never regretted. Question, I begin with a hopeful smile. Do you think it's possible I could get a pass on number 2? Maeve stares me down sternly. Josie. Fable clucks her tongue. Pretty sure that's a violation of the rules of bucket lists from relatives. I groan. It's just so not me. Maeve pats my hand. I know, but you didn't think number 1 was either, and Greta knew you well. She's too right. I set my face on the table and groan some more, like a wounded beast. Why do bucket lists have rules? It's asked of the universe. Of course they don't have rules, I know that, but when the person who loved you most gives you one, you probably shouldn't skip a turn. And I thought the first one was hard. I mutter. Maeve smirks. Fable's eyes twinkle. Well, wasn't it? I roll my eyes. Very, very hard. I sigh, lift my face, then brainstorm a plan for number two. That afternoon, I take off to see Christian, Liv, the twins, and my mom, who's here in town now helping out. My brother and his wife are in another room in their palace of a house, napping. Mom spends the whole time parked on the living room couch, holding the babies and talking about the babies, what they eat, what they weigh, what they'll need, and how they've slept. I get it. They're her first grandkids. I'm not really bothered that she hasn't asked about my job, which is the reason I'm here in San Francisco. She shifts gears, asking if I want something to eat. We ordered pad thai with chicken for lunch. There are plenty of leftovers, she says, then catches herself. Except, you're still vegetarian? Like it's the same as my pony phase, my Sweet Valley High phase. I still am, I say. They have some carrots, she offers. I shake my head. I'm good, Mom. A few minutes later, she finally says, How is the library? It's asked with clear interest, so I tell her the full truth. I love it already, I say. I just do. Tell me everything, she says, and I give her the highlights, including raccoon, which delights her. I'm so happy, Jay, and you know Greta would be happy too. She would. She truly would. Sometimes I feel like Greta's all mine, but my mom lost a sister too, far too early. Then, since she knows it exists, even though she hasn't seen the list, I draw a quiet breath and say, I started it, the list Greta gave me. Her eyes widen. Oh, you did? Yes, I finally did. I say, That's wonderful. She pauses, swallows, perhaps collecting her emotions too, then says, Does it make you feel closer to her? Well, the one-night stand made me feel closer to my roomie, but I don't tell her that. I just nod. It does. Good. I'm glad. Me too. Later, when I say goodbye and head out with my map on my phone and a plan to check out the Painted Ladies, I think back to some of my fondest memories with my aunt. Days spent wandering the library she took me to in her town, afternoons getting lost in the stacks, early evenings back at her little cottage eating tomato soup and grilled cheese and playing Monopoly while my parents took my brother to one hockey thing or another. How do you do it? How do you take me for everything I'm worth in Monopoly? She'd ask when she'd land on Park Place and I'd ask her to fork over so much rent. I'd just smile and say, I'm good at following the rules. The rules aren't why you win. The strategy is, she'd say with a twinkle in her eye like she was sharing a secret just for me. And you've got that, baby. Baby. I was always baby, but it was said like baby was a Broadway star. That's how I felt with her, like the star. I picture the list tucked safely away inside a blank book in my canvas bag back in my room. As I walk past the Victorians in pretty shades of yellow, lavender, and mint, I check the time. It's late afternoon on a Saturday. What does Wesley do on Saturday nights? Will it be weird for me to punch in the passcode on the door, wander in, and say, Hey, what are you up to on a Saturday night? I haven't had a roommate since my freshman year of college, and we were totally out of sync. Staying with Maeve was different. Besties don't have boundaries that can't be crossed. My stomach flip-flops with worry. I don't want to encroach on his space any more than I already have. But that's what books and book nooks are for. That's what I'll do, escape into a book. With that resolved, I walk up and down the blocks around Alamo Square, getting to know my new temporary home and settling into a plan for the evening. I'll make a cheese sandwich, slice an apple, and return to my room to enjoy the spine-tingling thriller about a suburban mom who becomes convinced her neighbors across the street are murderers. But that settled feeling disappears when I head up the steps to Wesley's place. Returning this morning from my fruit and grocery errand was different. It was daylight. It's dusk now, and nighttime is, well, its own mood. Maybe I should call first? What if he just got out of the shower and is slinging on a towel? My chest goes hot. I stop mid-stairs, grabbing the railing. Not a helpful thought, girl. I take a beat to let that tempting image subside, then reach the door, poised to tap in the code. But I can't shake the feeling that I'm an interloper. With a wince, I knock instead, offering a cheery, knock, knock. I listen for noise. It's quiet. Then peer into the slim rectangular window right next to the front door. Nothing. I start to punch in the code when my breath catches. Oh, God. This is not a drill. Repeat after me. This is not a drill. Wesley's in gray sweats and nothing else. The man is shirtless. And I'm just dead. Chapter 16. A Little Nosy. Josie. I'm gawking. I really need to stop. I do my best to pick up my jaw right as he swings open the door, tilting his head.
You don't have to knock,
he says. I don't have to stare either, but I'm doing that too. That carved chest, the smattering of dark hair across his ripped pecs, the ladder of his abs with muscles stacked on top of muscles. I can't stop cataloging all the spots on the map of his body. That blue bruise I traced lightly last Sunday on the side of his stomach is gone now, but there's a fresh one on his right bicep. And then there's the scar on his wrist, white and faded, a marker. Yeah, it's definitely not from a bike. It's from a skate, I say, entering the conversation in media res. His brow knits as he motions for me to come inside.
What do you mean?
He asks it like I'm the weirdo he regrets inviting to live with him, because I am. I try to collect my thoughts. The scar on your right wrist, it's from a skate blade, right? He gives a small smile of resignation, then a nod, one that says he didn't want to tell me he played hockey the night I met him.
Happened my first season.
I tow off my canvas sneakers as he shuts the door. What happened? Did it hurt?
I got stitches and returned to the game to get an assist.
I roll my eyes, but in admiration of his mettle. Such a hockey player move. He just shrugs.
It was the only thing to do.
He tips his forehead to my chin.
Also, pot, kettle. You got back on your bike after you cut your chin.
My heart rate spikes. He remembers every detail. I did. I pause, then get out my conversational backhoe and fill in the rest of the story. I was chasing my brother, so I had to get back on my bike. I was determined to stay on, but I'm not athletic, like, whatsoever. I tried soccer once, and I stood in the corner of the field wondering if Katniss was going to save PETA or not.
She did. A lot.
She really did, I say. And even if I got back on the bike, I'm really not athletic.
You're tougher than you think.
He gestures to the kitchen.
I'm making some food. Do you want something?
Sure. I can make my own stuff, though. I don't need to take your food.
I'm offering,
Wesley says. And I follow him through the house, walking through the living room where the TV screen is paused on a hockey game to the kitchen. He set up quite the spread on a beautiful blonde wood charcuterie board with a pretty array of grapes, broccoli spears, daikon radishes, nuts, blackberries, and olives. Wow, you're a charcuterist, I say.
I took a class,
he explains. There are classes on charcuterie boards?
Josie, there are classes on everything,
he says dryly, a little playfully, and the tone makes me feel like maybe we can figure out this